This is KHSU.
KHSU.
Who writes internationally on cannabis as medicine. I'm your host, Emma Brakan, and we'll be talking to Sharon today about her new books and how you probably should have voted on that big proposition for legalization in California. Coming up now on Through the Eyes of Women, right here on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. Author and cannabis superstar Sharon Letts is talking to us in drizzly Humboldt today, all the way from beautiful Baja, California. Hello, Sharon. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hi, Emma. Thanks so much for having me.
Real pleasure to have you. Tell us, how is it in Baja today?
Well, we don't get a lot of rain down here, which is not too good, but it is a gorgeous, sunny, beautiful day, and I'm overlooking the ocean right now. So, todo bien, as we say here in Mexico, it's all good.
Sounds like you're living the dream. Sharon, you have such an interesting career that puts you in so many places. You've had contact with some really fascinating personalities. You're doing important work, healing and educating. If you can indulge me, Sharon, I just want to go straight to it. I don't want to try and pretend to be cool. Can you please tell us a little bit about what it's like hanging out with Willie Nelson?
Oh, that was nice. Willie was a phone call. We had a nice chat on the phone. He's a lovely guy. I'm positive he was smoking a fatty while we were talking, which was completely appropriate. And he's just a wonderful guy. I had read his autobiography the year before. I had actually hung out with his wife the year before. I met her at the Women Grow Leadership Summit in Colorado 2 years ago at a breakfast. And she's really awesome. And that's how I got Willie on the cover of Dope last year. But my first celebrity cover, I'm very proud of it, was Rick Simpson on Dope Magazine's cover last year. Rick Simpson, of course, is recreator of the cannabis oil that put my breast cancer into remission while I was living in Humboldt 5 years ago. That was an exciting cover for me. I interviewed him on the phone also from Australia. But the living rooms I got to sit in were, the first one was Tommy Chong.
Oh, please, please tell us something, anything about Tommy Chong.
He's so wonderful. He's like an instant best friend. I walked up to his house. The garage door was open. He actually has a woodworking shop. You know, every time anyone interviews Tommy, it's all about stoner jokes and stoner stuff. And my profiles on celebrities are actually patient profiles. So I was there to talk to him about, you know, the prostate cancer situation he had gone through 3 years prior and the reoccurrence of the cancer. So I walked up to the house and jazz is playing and he's asleep on the couch. He's actually a woodworker. Not too many people know that. Usually when Tommy gets interviewed, it's all about stoner stuff. And with me, my celebrity profiles are actually patient profiles where we talk about, you know, the use of cannabis as medicine. So I was at Tommy's house to talk with him about the prostate cancer he had 3 years prior, and he only used cannabis oil to put it into remission. And then he went on Dancing with the Stars, and to prove a point that he wasn't, quote unquote, addicted to weed, he stopped using cannabis altogether through the 6 month pre-production and production of Dancing with the Stars. And then he never went back on his regimen. When you put your cancer into remission or any kind of ailment into remission with cannabis, you pretty much have to stay on it for life. And he went off of it and kind of slacked, and it came back. And it came back still as stage one, but the family was in turmoil, like any family. It doesn't matter whether you're a celebrity or not. Some of your people in your family want you to do chemo and radiation and surgery, and others want you just to try the oil again. His wife wanted him just to do the oil again. So he ended up having surgery and chemo and I don't know what else, but he did use the oil all the way through his treatments and he's fine now. So, but it was a lovely visit. It was a lovely visit. He actually has a woodworking shop in his garage and not too many people know that.
So is it a good time then to ask you about maybe the stigma that cannabis patients face in their choice of medicine that they're using?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tommy's a great example. You know, here he's known for his cannabis use for decades. You know, his son went to prison over it, over, you know, putting his image on a bong. And yet within the family, there still was the stigma, you know, that they were afraid. They no one really can trust it. You know, people can't trust it because the stigma is greater than the truth.
So these big names that you occasionally get to work with that just impress little pea brains like me so much, are they okay with you talking about their business like this?
Yeah. I mean, it's in the stories I write. I mean, if you read Tommy's stories, it's in there. I mean, I think I even mentioned that the family was in conflict. Melissa Etheridge, I got to hang out with her at her house, and she's lovely. And, you know, she wasn't even a stoner when she got cancer, her breast cancer. Stephen Stills, who's, you know, the surrogate father of two of her children, is the one that encouraged her to start smoking cannabis through her breast cancer treatments. So she started smoking cannabis because of the breast cancer. When the cancer was shown to be gone, she stopped the chemo treatments and kept on with the smoking. And as the cannabis nag that I am, one of the first questions during her interview was, are you ingesting to keep the cancer away? And, you know, she had a hard time with that. She's not really used to ingesting. Getting used to THC by ingesting is something that you have to get used to, but it's like anything. You become immune to the THC after a while. You know, you really don't feel it that much. Or you do suppositories with no head high. There's all different ways of delivering the plant into your system to keep the medicine in your system. So I kind of nagged her a little bit about that, but we had a really good visit, and she's completely on board. You know, she's a huge advocate now. So I was very happy to put her on the cover of the magazine. Another cover I'm extremely proud of is Laganja Estranja. For those who aren't familiar with Laganja, she was, at the time I interviewed, a 24-year-old drag queen from Texas who came to California to study dance at CalArts. And while she was there, a chiropractor said, "Have you ever tried cannabis for your pain?" And so she became a huge advocate, even incorporating, you know, Laganja Estranja, Laganja, the name, into her title. I worked for 2 years to get her on the cover of Dope Magazine because the homophobe thing is so great. And then after it was, gay marriage was federally recognized by the government, the magazine said, yes, let's put her on the cover. So we did, and it was a patient profile talking about, you know, a child who has been suffering PTSD since, you know, a young age. That's not discussed too much, the PTSD situation in the LGBTQ community. And I know that Humboldt is just going through some gay pride turmoil. So I just wanted to say about that the PTSD and the issues in being in the LGBTQ community and not being recognized in that community.
That sounds pretty special, an LGBT person putting themselves forward regarding cannabis. That's a lot of stigma to take in one swoop.
Yeah, so I've written extensively about Laganja, and I always include the PTSD situation because, you know, vets have it from war. If you go through a traumatic accident or traumatic experience, you do suffer from PTSD. Those in the LGBTQ community suffer from it from a very early age, and they're even in the closet and unsure of their relationships, even with their own parents. So it's a big deal. So anytime I get to interview Laganja, it always goes into that, you know, the emotional issues that they deal with and how cannabis helps, because cannabis does help with emotional issues.
Sharon, what is the job description of a cannabis evangelist?
Well, it's kind of a calling. I kind of liken it to that movie, was it Close Encounters with Richard Dreyfuss, where they all were envisioning that mountain that they had to go to or build or something. It was like, once you're helped with cannabis as medicine, you feel compelled to help others. You feel compelled because the Department of Health Services doesn't have a pamphlet. You have to be the pamphlet. And I've written of this. And for all of us, there's a lot of cannabis angels, oil angels I've written about all over the world now that have been helped either with having their cancer being put into remission or other serious ailments. I mean, I've done patient profiles on just juicing the leaf and it puts MS into remission. I've interviewed people that were on 23 meds and bedridden with MS and they're now in remission just with juicing leaf. So, and then they go on to help others. I mean, it's a big deal. You know, people that are suffering in bed on 23 meds, that's a big deal. If you have this knowledge, you want to be able to help people. So it's a calling, you know, and you find yourself evangelizing in the strangest places. I mean, I did an essay on it called Evangelizing Cannabis. You can Google. And I mean, trains, planes, automobiles, it's like almost like divine intervention. You sit down next to someone, start chatting. You know, I always say I'm a writer, and ultimately they always ask me what I write about. And then, you know, I tell them about my own breast cancer story, which happened in Humboldt, and I guess we'll get there. And then, you know, one thing leads to another, and they ultimately know someone that's suffering from some ailment, either it's chronic pain or sleep disorders or something more serious. And, you know, it's a nice thing. And then they can go on and do their own research and find out about it. And it's really all word of mouth right now. I mean, the oil that puts things into remission, Rick Simpson oil, I also put him on the cover of a magazine. I was proud of that. He recreated this recipe only 15, 20 years ago. So it hasn't even been out in the public that long, this knowledge, but it's only word of mouth right now. And it's global.
What's your personal story of your relationship with cannabis, Sharon?
Well, I'm from the 70s. I grew up in Southern California on the beach in the 60s and 70s. So I was no stranger to drugs, alcohol, and weed, as we called it. And I started smoking. I smoked my first joint on the way to high school in the morning in a gas station bathroom with my sister and a friend. And up until then, I was considered not very bright. I was a CD student. I was pretty much failing high school at that point. I couldn't focus. I couldn't concentrate. I had processing problems, but no one knew how to help me. I would literally cry over my homework and no one could help me. And that morning when I smoked my first joint, I had clarity for the first time. And I started being published as a poet at 19. I started my own business in gardening at 24. I actually was a flower bed gardener in Southern California. I had a truck and a crew and everything. And then that parlayed into television. I was a field and segment producer in Los Angeles.
Wait, Sharon, can I interrupt you, please? You said that a flower garden parlayed into a television career?
Yeah, I was a gardener. I had a truck. I was president of our local garden club. I was very high profile and in gardening, flower beds, perennial flower borders. I'm not talking cannabis now. And the local programming director of a local station where I lived asked me if I would please do a gardening show. And I really didn't know what that meant, but I organized it and planned it. I was the host on camera. I wrote it. And when the credits rolled, I was producer, I was host, I was writer. And so this is really how I started my television career. And so I went on to produce a series for PBS in California, a travel series. And then I went on to be in-house in television in Los Angeles as a field and segment producer. And when I was in Los Angeles on a fluke, I think my daughter wanted to go up to Humboldt for school. We just wanted to leave the city. I wanted a simpler life. And so I sent my resume to the Eureka Reporter, of all things, because that was the first thing that popped up on online. And I sent them my resume 2 days after I mailed it. Someone from the Eureka Reporter called me and offered me a job. Rob Barkley brought me up to produce a news show for the Eureka Reporter in Channel 6 at the time. So, ironically, I came up to Humboldt to produce a news show. And then while I was working in media in Humboldt, I presented with lobular carcinoma, breast cancer, not a tumor that could be mistaken for a cyst. Lobular looks like a white spider web mass in your breast. It's very hard to get rid of. Only 10 to 15% of all women in the U.S. have it, and it usually always requires surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation follow-up. So because I was in Humboldt and had been, you know, writing for newspapers, I was in-house at the Times Standard as the lead feature writer there. So someone gave me the oil. A medicine maker in Southern Humboldt said, here, we do this. We've done it for a long time. It's just under the radar. It's word of mouth. It's covert. But this works. I started juicing leaf first because of Dr. William Courtney, and Humboldt is familiar with Dr. Courtney. He put his wife's lupus into remission just by juicing leaf. He pitched this story to me while I was in-house at the Times Standard, and of course they wouldn't let me write about it at all. So he was in the back of my head. So before my first biopsy, I started just putting leaf in blenders with smoothie, chopping it up and putting it in salads. I really kind of did it half-assed. I wasn't even serious. I didn't think it would work. And the first biopsy, part of the mass was gone. And everyone was shocked. The technician was shocked. The oncologist was shocked over at Humboldt Radiology. And the oncologist said, well, let's go ahead. And I've written about this, too. You can Google my cancer story online. I've written extensively about it. And the oncologist said, well, let's go ahead and do the biopsy anyway, because I can still see part of it. And I said, no, actually, you know what? I heard about this oil. I think I want to give it a go. Can we just put this off another 6 to 8 weeks? Because I really didn't want that big needle. I didn't want anything invasive if I didn't have to. So I got the oil, and I started doing the oil. And 6 to 8 weeks, we did it. The second biopsy was scheduled and went in. And lo and behold, it was completely gone. He didn't even know where to do the biopsy.
Completely gone.
Completely gone. I've been in remission ever since. That was 5 years ago. So, you know, I was already in mainstream media. I already was, you know, I had been in television. I had contacts all over the place. And no mainstream outlet wanted to hear my story. So I started writing initially 5 years ago for High Times. And then, you know, every other cannabis magazine there is. And now I've been published, I think, in 20. And I'm published around the world now as a features writer. But that's how it happened. And so when that happened, I mean, even the man I lived with at the time didn't believe that it was medicine and didn't really believe, you know. But because I was never diagnosed, because I never actually had the biopsy and a diagnosis on paper, I've been criticized saying, well, how do you know if you even have it? But the thing is, because I wasn't diagnosed, I'm now part of a 30-year study with the American Cancer Society on prevention. Everyone in my mom's family has passed from cancer or dealt with cancer. She was raised on a farm in Illinois where they used DDT and other pesticides. So I'm third generation DDT. And I've done a lot of research in this area. DDT is only one chemical we've been subjected to. But this is why I don't say cannabis cures cancer, because it's actually in our stem cells. They know that DDT alone stays in our bloodline up to five generations that they know already. So, you know, we're constantly dealing with toxins in our system. And that's why I became an apothecarian, a kitchen apothecarian, because I have to keep the plant in my system, and not just cannabis. I mean, thyme and oregano have a 97% success rate of putting cancer into remission. Chamomile has a 93% success rate. So my hashtag lately is not just cannabis. I do all kinds of herbs. I keep plant-based medicines in my body on a daily basis.
You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Bercon, and we are speaking with author, kitchen apothecary, and cannabis evangelist Sharon Letts about medicine, legalization, and her upcoming books. Sharon, you have told us a story that we seem to be hearing more and more of. So let me read it back to you and see if I'm hearing you correctly. You had cancer, breast cancer, yes. And we're not entirely certain of that because we didn't take a biopsy because you had such successful reaction to cannabis oil. Is that correct?
Well, the thing is, when you look at the mammogram, I mean, all of us have stood over the shoulder of the technician while they're looking at the pictures in the mammogram. Lobular carcinoma is a distinct spider web like mass that, you know, covers a pretty large portion of the bottom of the right side of my breast. When the picture came up on the mammogram, I said to the woman, that looks like a spider web. Those were the words that came out of my mouth. I really wasn't that familiar with lobular. My sister had had it 2 years prior, but I didn't really do the research. And when I saw the picture on the mammogram, you know, those were the words that came out of my mouth. Then we went to the ultrasound, same thing. It was a big white spider web. It's undeniable. So I'm pretty confident that I had lobular carcinoma, and the fact that my sister had it, you know, 2 years prior. Yeah, I'm pretty confident on that. And the interesting part is I had the mammogram follow-up 6 months. You know, every 6 months I'd have an ultrasound follow-up. The letter that the lab sends to me now says there's scar tissue in that area. And in the letter they put in writing, we are assuming this is from a prior surgery. So I never had a prior surgery. The scar tissue is there because that's where the cancer was. And in every cannabis cancer patient we know of where they have the biopsy afterwards or the mammogram or ultrasound afterwards or the x-rays afterwards, there's always scar tissue left behind. So I'm pretty confident that's what it is. I mean, yes, technically on a scientific level, you could say I didn't have the biopsy or the diagnosis, but, you know, a picture tells a thousand words.
Sharon, we keep hearing more of these stories. It's a lot of word and mouth, a lot of friends of friends, and we keep hearing about people reversing or at least mitigating the symptoms of some terrible diseases, getting off of a whole lot of pharmaceuticals that they're taking to manage those symptoms that the CBD seemed to be treating. How many more of these stories are we going to hear before it catches on?
It's interesting you mentioned CBD. I'm really not sure. It's not my experience that CBD can put cancer into remission. I have heard some stories. Because in Israel, it was found that THC kills cancer cells. That was in the 60s. And the United States' response to that was to hire Dr. Todd McEury. And Humboldt peeps are familiar with him, too. He was a Humboldt Patient Resource Center in-house doc for a while. He's gone now. He's since passed. But the U.S. government hired him to debunk Israel's theory findings that cannabis is medicine and THC puts cancer cells into remission. So he worked less than a year to debunk it, could not, issued a report that the government buried saying it is indeed medicine. We should be looking into this. He resigned his position and spent the rest of his life advocating for the plant as medicine. And he was one of the co-authors on Prop 215 and why we even have cannabis as medicine in the United States today. So, yeah, there's a lot of history that people aren't aware of about cannabis as medicine and THC in particular. And this is why so many people are all over the whole plant theory, because there's more than 400 compounds in cannabis. And as I said earlier, thyme and oregano have a 97% success rate in putting cancer into remission. Cannabis has a 99%, and it does much more than just cancer, as you said. I've covered 6 states and 3 countries in the last few years writing for magazines, and in my travels, I see the healing everywhere. I've covered both Colorado and Washington before and after legalization, and what legalization means is that medicine makers feel comfortable to come out of the woodwork and share, and more people get healed. And then the rules have to be evaluated, but that's a whole other conversation.
Thanks for bringing up legalization, Sharon. We're recording this 1 week before Election Day. It's an election that's going to be remembered for generations as being really fraught and ugly and polluted with misinformation. We have a really controversial proposition on the ballot in California. Nobody on either side of the issue seems to particularly like it. How are we supposed to feel? A lot of our listeners will be hearing you too late, but what should they have taken into account when they voted?
Geez, well, yeah, it's hard. The thing is, I'm from Southern California. I lived in Humboldt 9 years, so I'm Humboldt is beloved to me, and the farmers there. When I was in House of the Times Standard, I did a series on farmers in the kitchen, you know, cooking. So I'm very close to the farmers up there. I know that they all subsidize with cannabis. And the thing is, there's a huge difference between Southern California and Northern California. Northern California is all about agriculture and the farmers and cottage industry and keeping it local. Southern California is huge industry, you know, entertainment industry's there, corporate is America's there. There's huge differences, and that's why the lines are drawn. The thing is, it's medicine. Cannabis is medicine. To legalize it for recreation, it's ironic to me, because even the most ardent stoner insisting that they're just getting high, they have physiological and emotional, neurological benefits just from smoking. If they start doing medibles, it's life-changing. So it's a huge issue. I mean, I want legalization to pass. I want our farmers to be taken care of. And that I'm speaking straight to Humboldt and the Emerald Triangle. We don't want people to go to jail anymore. So it's ironic because legalization will get people out of jail. It'll expunge records. On the other hand, the AMA proposition, it's only 1 ounce. If you're caught with more than 1 ounce, the 3 strikes laws apply. And three strikes in California is 25 years to life, at least. So in that respect, that bothers me. And it bothers me that it's left up to a judge's discretion. But my hashtag right now is legalize to litigate. Because people go into legalization, like Colorado went into legalization, thinking recreation. But the big secret is that more people heal. When a state is legalized, the medicine makers feel comfortable to share. And we have to keep talking about the healing of medicine. Because when you keep talking about the healing, then the farming of it, the processing, the manufacturing and distribution will be necessary, not negative. And that's my message.
Sharon, will you tell us about your books?
I have two ebooks, Humboldt Stories and Cannaopolis, and they're both inspired by Northern California. Humboldt Stories actually started as Behind the Curtain in the Arcata Eye, and it was a play on words to the redwood curtain and the curtain that's usually hanging in a hallway, separating a grow room from the rest of the house. So I started writing it when Prop 19 actually was on the ballot because I wanted to put a human face on the farmers that I knew who, you know, even when I was in-house at the Eureka Reporter, I learned that, you know, the wages are so low up there in Northern California that people are in the cannabis industry as a subsidy, you know. So I wanted to show what that life was like. So I started writing it, and I really love it. I'm proud of it. It's all based on fact. Even Barb Broom let me use her name and gave me a recipe for ganja hard cider. So I'm really proud of that series. And so, yeah, I put it into an ebook. I'm also pitching it as a film project. And then Cannaopolis is fiction based on fact of a town somewhere in the Great Northwest, cut off from society 30, 40 years, literally without disease or illness. It's a fun book. It's told through the eyes of a visiting science journalist from New York, who comes, you know, with a prescription bottle of pills in his pocket, but soon finds he doesn't need them anymore. So it's a good story. It's kind of a fantasy. It's fiction, but it is totally based on fact, and it's very educational.
Do you think Humboldt's kind of got a mythos about it?
It's real. I mean, that life is like, no, you can't find it anywhere else. I mean, some say Vermont is the Humboldt of the East Coast, and there is a mentality there. There's pockets all over the world where they have that third eye opened up and that mentality. But Humboldt is a special place. I mean, people do live closer to land because they have to, because you're so cut off up there. I mean, 5 hours above San Francisco is real. And buying local, eating local is important. And it's a way of life. And it's a way of life that people in the city, they will never have. They can try, but it's harder. It's just different. It's a whole mindset. And that's really what Cannaopolis is all about. It's about that mindset.
Sharon, as we get ready to say goodbye, Sharon, do you deal with stigma from this work that you're doing?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah, like I said, I've covered a lot of states. I've put about 6,000 miles a year in it to travel. I gave my Educated Stoner presentation to Costa Rica's medical conference a few months ago. And everywhere I go, it's a stigma. People don't know because, you know, as I said, Department of Health Services isn't passing out pamphlets. All we know is what we were told for years and years, that this will fry your brain, you know, but actually it's a neuroprotectant. So, you know, what do you do with information that tells you it's going to fry your brain for years like a fried egg in a pan? And then we find out that it's actually a neuroprotectant that can reduce inflammation, chronic inflammation in the body, and protect against dementia and Alzheimer's. I mean, that's huge. And it's all word of mouth right now. So hopefully legalizing California will open a lot of doors to a lot more information on medicine. That's what my hope is.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Sharon. Thanks for being on Through the Eyes of Women today.
Thank you. It's been great. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Brecon, and I've been speaking with Sharon Letts, the Florence Nightingale of Weed, about her books and columns and medicines. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer, Katie Whiteside, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.